All right, so listeners, you really sent us some fascinating stuff about Lord of the Flies. Get ready, because we're going deeper than a typical book report today. We're diving into the symbolism, the historical echoes, and what this book really tells us about, well, ourselves.
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? Like, how can a book written decades ago about a bunch of kids stuck on an island still feel so relevant today?
That's the million-dollar question. And thankfully, you sent us the goods to figure it out. We've got Lord of the Flies and analysis.pdf, a study guide, a teacher guide, and even some historical context. Looks like someone wants to ace this test.
Definitely overkill for your average book report. But to really understand the power of this book, you have to understand it's more than just a story, it's an allegory.
Right, it's like Golding created this island as a mini society, this microcosm, to see what happens when all the rules vanish.
And boy, do those rules disappear quickly. One minute it's all conch shells and order, and the next it's.
Right.
Yeah, and speaking of things disappearing quickly, civilization goes right out the window. All the sources agree, World War II had a huge impact on Golding.
He wasn't just writing about war, he lived it. He was a soldier, saw the absolute worst of humanity.
And that's where the real horror of Lord of the Flies comes from, right? That beast they're hunting. Not some monster in the jungle, but something inside us all. Golding saw that darkness unleashed during the war and brought it to life on the island.
Right, and let's not forget, he was also writing at the dawn of the atomic age. That constant fear, knowing humanity could wipe itself out, it seeps into everything.
It's like this underlying dread. Even in paradise, nowhere feels truly safe.
Exactly, and that's why it still resonates today. The fear of the bomb might have faded, but the fear itself, that we're capable of such darkness, yeah, that's as relevant as ever.
And that's where things get really interesting. You've got this battle royale going on, but it's not between kids. It's between civilization and, I don't know, our inner caveman.
Exactly. It's like this primal struggle. You've got Ruth on one side trying desperately to hold on to order, to build a society that can survive.
He's the one who wants to keep that signal fire going, right? That
Yeah.
symbol of hope that someone will find them.
Right. Ralph represents that part of us that wants to believe in reason and cooperation.
Yeah.
And then you've got Jack.
Ugh, Jack. He's almost seductive in a way, isn't he? All charisma, all about the hunt, the thrill of the kill. He's not interested in shelters or rescue. He wants power, and he wants it now.
It's fascinating how Golding uses the psychology of his time to explore this. One study guide even compares it to Freud's id, ego, and superego.
Oh, I can see that. Jack being all id, driven by pure impulse, throws a tantrum when he doesn't get his way, like a toddler with a spear.
Exactly. And then there's Ralph, struggling to be the superego, the voice of reason and morality, but he's fighting a losing battle. Poor piggy, caught in the middle.
Piggy, with his glasses, desperately trying to see clearly to find a rational solution. It's like he represents that part of us that wants to cling to logic, even when everything's falling apart.
And as we see, logic doesn't fare too well in Lord of the Flies. Piggy's fate. Well, let's just say it doesn't exactly inspire hope for the power of reason.
It's brutal. And what gets me, all the sources point out that even Ralph, the good guy, isn't immune. That scene where he gets caught up in the mock hunt and almost kills Robert.
Chilling, right? It smashes that black and white view of good versus evil. Even Ralph, with the best intentions, can get swept away by the thrill of the hunt, the allure of power.
And that's where Golding really gets you. He makes you confront that uncomfortable truth. Like, maybe, just maybe, we all have that capacity for savagery, that it's not just something other people do.
Makes you think, doesn't it?
Oh.
What would you do on that island? Could you resist the darker impulses?
Okay, now you're just trying to freak me out, but I think that's the point of the book, right? It forces us to ask those hard questions about ourselves, about human nature. And speaking of things that are a bit unsettling, can we talk about the symbolism Golding uses? Honestly, I swear Golding had a whole dictionary of symbols just lying around when he wrote this thing.
Right. It's like every other page, there's a new symbol to unpack. But that's the beauty of it, isn't it? Each one so carefully chosen, so layered with meaning.
The teacher's guide practically needs its own table of contents for all the symbolism. You've got the conch, obviously, Piggy's glasses, that ever-important signal fire.
And, well, we can't forget the big one, can we? The Lord of the Flies.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't just casually toss a rotting pig's head into a story and call it a day.
It's such a disturbing image, isn't it? This gruesome, decaying thing just crawling with flies becomes this symbol of what exactly? The breakdown of everything.
Remember how the island becomes this kind of microcosm of society? The Lord of the Flies. That's the dark side, the underbelly of it all. It's the fear, the violence, that primal instinct that takes over when the rules vanish.
And it actually speaks to Simon, right? Fancy thinking the beast was something you could hunt and kill. I'm part of you.
Chilling, isn't it? That's the horrifying realization Simon has. The beast isn't some external monster, it's internal. A darkness within all of them, within all of us.
Which connects to this idea of blindness and sight that Golding keeps coming back to. It's not by chance that Piggy, the voice of reason, relies on his glasses to see.
And when those glasses are gone, he's vulnerable,
Yeah.
powerless, literally can't see the danger coming. It's like Golding is saying our ability to think clearly, to be rational, it's fragile, easily shattered.
While the other boys, the ones seduced by the darkness, they're blind in a different way.
Exactly. Blinded by their fear, their desires, they're completely oblivious to the consequences of their actions. They become the monsters they think they're hunting. Well, it makes you think.
So we've got this allegory for society, all this symbolism, and Golding writing this in the shadow of World War II, a world on the brink of annihilation. What's the message? What's he trying to tell us?
All the sources seem to agree on this Lord of the Flies. It's a warning, a cautionary tale about how fragile civilization is, how easy it is for that darkness inside us to take over. Remember, Golding saw the horrors of war, lived through them, and he wrote this at a time when the world was terrified of nuclear war.
There's this one line from the historical analysis that really stuck with me. The officer, having interrupted a manhunt, prepares to take the children off the island in a cruiser which will presently be hunting its enemy in the same implacable way.
That's the really scary part. The officer represents rescue, right? A return to order, to safety. But he's also part of a system that's committing the same kind of violence they just witnessed on the island. It's like an endless cycle.
So where does that leave us? Are we destined to repeat these patterns forever? Is there any hope?
Golding doesn't really give us the answers, does he? But I think the question he leaves us with is this: who rescues the rescuers? If even those in charge are capable of such darkness, then it's up to all of us to recognize those impulses within ourselves, to fight them, to choose civilization over savagery.
It's a lot to unpack. It definitely gives you a new appreciation for Lord of the Flies, doesn't it? It's more than just a book. It's this reflection on some pretty dark aspects of human nature.
And sometimes facing those dark parts of ourselves, that's the first step to making sure they don't win.
I like that. So, to everyone listening, we'll leave you with this Golding's question still stands. What would you do on that island? As you navigate the world, what choices are you making? What will your actions say about the beast within?